Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, and it's the tornado, Tony Tenacow.
And we have a live show coming at you this week. We don't have a guest, but cuffing on here, and got a lot to talk about. I got a lot of stuff we never talked about a couple weeks ago. I know you guys kind of didn't connect. I didn't have internet access on the trip down to Massachusetts, so... But you did do some kind of show, right?
Yeah, I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it. Probably not. But and I don't know if it recorded or not. But I know the show was live on the air because Tom could hear me. Tom was unable to affect, but what he was doing was
emailing you. Hello. Tony.
Unlimited, so I could hear myself. Then I kind of had to shut that off because I was echoing. And Tom could hear me. Tom was, he was commenting on some of the topics I was talking about, and he would send emails in so I could, his point of view on the air because he wasn't able to log in or, get on the call. So I said, I don't know if it recorded or not, but we had a live show. We, I went about 90 minutes, discussed, several topics. And I said, one of them, obviously I covered all the boxing, events. Tom emailed me with some MMA, news and information. So, I could read that to the listeners. And then what I did was I talked about a documentary I watched about 2 weeks ago on the Biography Channel regarding the death of Arturo Gatti, which points more and more to murder. And, I'm a big fan of the show Forensic Files. It's on...
Oh, yeah, I know it well.
Now it's on another channel, Channel 101 on My Fires. And I watch marathons, four to 5 hours of it. I love the show. And I think Forensic Files needs to get involved in this Gotti case.
I think our co-host, Tom, works with the files sometimes. Don't you, Tom?
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
I can hear you. Tom, I couldn't hear you last week, but I can hear you now.
Okay, we're good. We're good. All right. Yeah, great job, Tony. Sorry I couldn't, in and co-pilot, but I'm telling you, you just segued into a lot of things nice and smooth, and you kept it going. Very, very good energy. Very good rhythm.
And like I said, you helped me out a lot, just by being able to email me and giving me topics, and also giving counterpoints to some of the topics I was talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm gonna
Hey, what happened?
Oh, you tell me what happened.
I blew a circuit. I don't know. No, I got a phone call into my dad, so we had a major delay getting reconnected. Nothing wanted to work. But anyway, I know we had a lot of big boxing upsets this last week, so I'm sure you're ripping to go on that one.
Well, I didn't get to see much of the fights last week. I tried both nights, and both nights I finished working long days, working the most macho job I could think of, selling Easter flowers. And both nights I fell asleep because we figured Friday night, I did like a 9 or so hour day that day and got home and the fight started at 10. They always do that. Why is it like early the next day? Oh, no, they don't start on time. Oh, let's start at 10 o'clock. And I fell asleep. So Saturday, I got up at, like, about a 10-hour night. And I'm like, oh, Saturday night, definitely got to watch the fight. Definitely got to watch the fight. I'm like, shit, I got to be at this place by, like, 7:30 tomorrow morning. I'm like, shit. You know? And then I was like, dude, I'm sitting there. I had dinner. And I'm like, on my computer, and I'm like, dude, the fight's at 10:15, and I'm already dozing off. I put the fights on. I fell asleep during the ring walk of the first fight. But my dad was happy enough, contact me the next day when I was working. Like, yeah, I missed a hell of a fight last night. That Rios and Alvarez, they went at it again. You missed it. I'm like, yeah, I know I missed it. Thanks for rubbing it in, you jerk. But yeah, Alvarez got the revenge of time, and it spells trilogy.
And I know there were a couple other upsets, big upsets, I think. Edwin Rodriguez won his fight. Dennis Gracev beat, I think, a guy who was undefeated. Tom was with him again.
Kennedy Golovkin fought him last week. And once again, another very impressive performance. I'm going to pull that up right now, and I'll go over it real quick. That was on the 30th. Where the hell did he fight at?
Can you hear us, Tom?
Yeah, I'm in.
I don't think he fought in the States. I got a few things that I wanted to just touch on that I spoke about last week real quick. Okay, we had Mike Alvarado beat Brandon Rios, by unanimous decision. Good close fight. Like I said, I didn't get to see it, but I heard good things. And then you had Terrence Crawford. I didn't really get to see his fight, but I know he pretty much outboxed, outmaneuvered Bradus Prescott, winning unanimous decision. So let me see if I can find him in the Golovkin fight.
Well, while you do that, I figured I might as well mention that tonight the 38th National Collegiate Boxing Championships are starting at Foxwoods Resort and Casino.
I wanted to go up to that, but and I was supposed to go help with the Lock Haven team a few weeks ago. They were on spring break from the 15th to like the 22nd or the 24th, whatever it was. But unfortunately, I was still at that time recovering, from strep throat, and I'm just starting to get my strength back. I talked about maybe going up last week, but I had my first workout last week since being sick, and it wasn't good. I got through it, and I was doing, the elliptical machine, and I was doing a little bit of work on a heavy bag.
Right.
And it was a workout, the 1997 version of myself,
would have said, I don't care if you're sick or not, this is not good. You know, get your ass in gear. I'm just starting to feel a little bit like myself again this week with the Haven team left Tuesday or Wednesday. I sent them a good luck message. I know they're actually going to be assisted by Bill Rabel, the former Penn State coach who coached against me many times back in my days. And what was funny was Coach Rabel actually took me out to Reno back in 98 when I fought Brian Kerr out there. I went out, it was myself, Chad Ford from the Lock Haven team, and Lou Muccio from Penn State. So we, we fought out there on Saturday. And the following Saturday, I'm down at the Naval Academy fighting Jesse Bond. And Bill Rabel's obviously in work in his corner. And after the fight was over, I remember going over there, and I was like, wait a minute. Weren't you in my corner last week? And we had a good laugh about that. But it was nice seeing him, after not seeing him for 10 years. Cool. The Gennady Golovkin fight. He absolutely annihilated Nobushiro Ishida. It was over in Monaco. Ishida basically he's running a win from 2 years ago. He had a freak stoppage win over James Kirkland. That's when Kirkland was 27-0. And Ishida right now is 24-9, 2 draws, 9 knockouts. That was one of his 9 knockouts. The fight after that, which was 7 months later, he knocks out a fighter in his pro debut over in Mexico. Then he fights Paul Williams, gets shut out on all 3 cards. Fights undefeated Dmitry Pirog, gets shut out on 2 of the 3 cards. And then he takes that and hasn't had a win in a year and a half and gets a title shot out of it. A weight class above his normal weight class. So I'm not really sure how the math works out on this. But he ran into a buzzsaw and he got knocked out in the 3rd round. And like I said, I didn't get to see it. It wasn't televised. But from all reports that I read, it was a pretty violent knockout. And Glossin, he's still rolling. He's a badass dude.
All right. Well, if you want to watch the 38th National Collegiate Boxing Championships, they're going to be on ESPN3.com live on Saturday for the finals.
Oh, no, sure. Maybe I'll do that. What time?
Eastern, and a replay on Sunday at 7 p.m. on ESPNU.
Cool. I'm cool with that. I know the Lock Haven team has 4 representatives. I don't think they won any of the regional titles. Very young team for the Haven, very young team. So I don't think they won, any of the regional titles. But, they still got 4 representatives out there and some pretty young guys. They got some young guys on the team out there. I did want to mention this. Like I said, Rich, last week before we cut off, 2 of the topics that I spoke about in my 90 minutes. I mean, obviously, I went over the previous weekend fights, and I went over what was coming up. And then I had Tom emailing me just to, fill me in and give me any information I was missing or just give me some comments, his commentary that I would read over the air. And the one thing I talked about, and I don't know if you heard me say it earlier before we got cut off, was a biography I watched a few weeks ago on the death of Arturo Gatti. It was on channel 129, which is the biography channel. And one thing I know we said before we cut off is I'm a big fan of the show Forensic Files. And I think this is a case that definitely needs to have some real professional investigating done. I know they exhumed Arturo's body about a year or so ago, and I don't know what the findings were there, but in a minute or so, I'm going to go over again what I saw in this biography, and this time we can get your feedback and Tom's feedback. And then the other topic I spoke about was one that you and I discussed a couple years ago when I first started doing the show, and that was the unjust imprisonment of Tim Doc Anderson for his self-defense shooting over his former promoter, Rick Elvis Parker. And I know Tom had been emailing me because he was reading a lot on that, on Wikipedia and on Google and just different articles about that case. And he'd been emailing me, like, how unbelievable it was.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I contacted his family at one point. They were going
to... I remember that. Remember we were trying to get him to do a prison interview with us.
Yeah.
And then they had the one lawyer down in Florida, and I don't remember her name off the top of my head. I got the paperwork somewhere. But she was trying to do some pro bono work. You know, she wasn't going to take any money for this and try to get, a retrial. And like I said, I don't know what happened with that. But like I said, she was taking no money just because she felt so strongly how it was an unjust case.
Right. And with Gotti's wife, I think she did it in the kitchen with the purse strap.
Absolutely. As I said last week in the show, and I know Tom was listening to me, so I'm going to get his feedback in a minute or so. Let me just recap this documentary. They talked about when Arturo first met Amanda Rodriguez. She claimed it was like they were both walking their dogs, and they just started talking. But all other reports, because she was an exotic dancer, and they said Arturo liked going to these exotic dancing clubs. He liked, you know, women like that. He was a very, that was what he liked, you know. And he met her at a club, and they said when he would go to this one club, obviously he's Arturo Gotti, and they, you know, they treated him like, you know, almost like royalty there because he's Arturo Gotti. And he took an interest in this Amanda Rodriguez. Now, Arturo had a daughter from a previous relationship, and what they were saying was they had a nuptial agreement, and she was really pissed off about that to the point where, because if they get divorced, she gets nothing. So Arturo rips up this prenuptial agreement in front of her, but it was a copy of it, which she found out. But a week or so before his death, they rewrote his will where she would get everything and their son and the daughter, the girl from the previous relationship, they were written out of it. Arturo's family was practically written out of it. So you figure, they divorce, she gets nothing. He dies, she gets it all. They had gone over, I think, with Paris, France on a vacation. Then they were going down to Brazil, and they said they were staying at like a little, like, almost like back country type of resort, no cameras, no nothing. It was like a very secluded type of place. And they said Arturo was a guy that he made his money, he spent his money. He liked first class things, he flew first class. He liked places like Marriott, Four Seasons, very expensive first class places. They said he would never stay at a place like that unless she coerced him. They're out for dinner the one night, and they're arguing, they're drinking, and he shoves her down. And he gets in a fight with some locals, hits the one guy, breaks his jaw. The reports that they were saying was he was fighting with four or five guys, and somebody hits him in the back of the head with a rock, causes a cut, because he's found the next morning in a pool of blood from the back of his head. He gets back to the resort. She says she's going to leave him, whatever, whatever. And then he apparently hangs himself with his purse strap. But the other story is that he only got in a fight with one person down there, broke his jaw. There was no thrown rocks, no group, none of that. He gets back to the hotel, so he goes to the lobby, and Arturo, I don't know if you remember or not, had a pair of boxing gloves tattooed on the back of his neck. And the clerk at the front desk made a comment about that tattoo, and he testified that there was no blood on Arturo in the back of his neck. Head on back. Also, Arturo, there was claimed that like she had told him she was leaving him and had gone up to bed. Then the next morning, he was laying on the floor. She stepped over him to get the baby a bottle and came down 3 hours later, and he was still there and he was with blood. Didn't notice it the first time. But there was traces of semen found in Arturo's underwear, leading to believe that they had sex on the counter. Now, she had a cab waiting there from when she was brought back, and she needed to wait for him to pay for it so she didn't have any money. The clerk testified that the cab driver stayed there for 45 minutes. So they're thinking there couldn't possibly have been two other guys that waited in that room after they had sex, and either they jumped him and hit him on the back of the head, or she hit him over the head with a bottle, and then they came out there and strangled him. They also took a dummy, half of the weight of Arturo's body weight. Now, he fought between, like, 135 and 147. So you figure walking around after his retirement, he's probably about 175, 180 pounds. They took about a dummy weighing about 90 pounds. They tried to hang him with the purse strap. It immediately broke. So how would he be able to hang himself there? They also said in the island by where his body was found, his head was almost pushed under, like the one on the bottom of the island. They said for a person that would have fallen down like that, it was next to impossible for his head to end up in that position. So all these things are leading to the fact that, you know, foul play was involved. And I think Forensic Files need to get involved on this. And just a crazy coincidence, yesterday, you know, I'm cleaning out some things in the one dresser drawer that I have, and a bunch of old programs from one of Philly games and Eagles games and some different flight crews that I went to. And what did I find? A 16 by 20 poster. One side Arturo Gatti, one side Mickey Ward from when I went down to Gatti Ward 3 10 years ago.
Nice.
Tom, I know you got to hear that story twice because you listened to me last week. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I mean, just going by feel, I mean, the whole thing just reeks. The problem is, the longer it goes with nothing done, the harder it's going to be to see any justice. My feeling is, of course he met with foul play. But I also can't, I mean, I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see justice being done in this.
You know, and I agree with you. Unfortunately, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. And I hope we're both wrong.
Yeah.
But, it's so in character with the way he lived, you know, when you think about it. I mean, you know, he had that kind of wild lifestyle before, and then from what I heard, his dad finally convinced him that a rock star lifestyle is not conducive to being a world champion. And he did kind of get it under control somewhat, but he always had weaknesses. And that's what made him him. I mean, like, his one of my favorite quotes from him was, "I'm not normal. Look at the way I fight." And, And it just, you wouldn't expect a guy like that to die of old age in an old folks home or a rocking chair or something. It's just, but it's just, as tragic as it is, I just can't see justice being done. I think there's just too many things that'll come up. And I'm telling you, I've just seen these things before, that every day as time goes on, it gets harder and harder. People forget, evidence goes cold, and I think it'll just be one of those things we'll have to live with.
One of the people on the show, and I forget if she was like a defense lawyer, if she was a pathologist. I apologize for not remembering exactly what her title was. But the one woman that was talking on there, if she was a defense lawyer, which is making me, you know, think something like that, she did have a great argument that as a juror, you know, would help put reasonable doubt for Amanda Rodriguez doing it. And that was, I mean, you have all this evidence that, you know, this, the purse strap wouldn't be heavy enough, the person not seeing cut on his head, the cab driver there 45 minutes. But nothing, you know, was 100% proven there. But the one thing that this woman said, which would cast more reasonable doubt than anything, was go back and look at his career and the possibility. And, you know, you had the tragedy about 5 years ago when Chris Benoit, you know, the professional wrestler, killed his wife and his son and then killed himself. And they said, you know, he had the brain of like an 80-year-old man from all these multiple concussions. You had guys like Andre Waters, who used to play for the Phillies, to kill themselves. and they said, you know, he had dementia, you know, from all the concussions playing football. And they were saying, look at this guy's fighting style. It's possible that he was in the stages of dementia from the multiple beatings he took in the ring.
But for every expert that would agree with that, there could be other experts for the prosecution that would dispute that. So it, and I don't know what you mean by reasonable doubt, but I just think that would be a pretty shaky defense to rely on.
Tom, I think they ought to put us on the jury, me, you, and Rich.
There you go. Okay. that sounds good. I'm in.
And I wanted to segue. I know Tom said I was pretty good at segueing my stories last week. So I wanted to segue this. As I just said a few minutes ago, I spent last weekend working for a friend of mine doing Easter flowers. And it was the first time I did. I do Christmas trees with them every year. First time I did the Easter flowers, and I had a good time. One of the things, I'm like a marketing guy. I know what people like. So I had the stand I was working was by myself. It was one of our smaller satellite stands. And I'm there the one day, and I have a boxing sweatshirt on. The guy shows up. He goes, boxing? I said, yeah. You know Harry Yorgi? I said, absolutely. I went to a couple weeks ago. I was there, too. No shit. Yeah, his father used to coach me in football. So I talked to him. 20 minutes later, my next customer comes. Boxing? Yeah. You know Harry Yorgi? Yes, I do. I was in his fight 3 weeks ago. No shit, so was I. Had great talks with these people. I gave them the Fight News Unlimited website, told them to look at my article on it. Like I said, but I'm a marketing guy. I have a lot of fun. I like talking to people. If I didn't, I wouldn't be on the show. So I was like, what do people like? You know, how can I not just sell them flowers, but I want to be able to sell myself? And the one thing I would do there, kind of what I do when I sell the trees and I wear the funny Santa hats, and we sell two kinds of trees. You know, when doing the trees, we do Fraser trees. And I thought, these are our smoking Joe Fraser trees. You know, they're sturdy. They're tough. Then I said, we got our Douglas trees over here. They're like Buster Douglas. They fall over quick. You want a Fraser. And people like it. They get a kick out of it. So
sure.
I had my my stereo set up, and I was like, you know, what am I going to do? I got my little Italian hat on. And I said, what am I going to play? I'm going to play some Sinatra. I'm going to play some Dean Martin. And I'm going to play some Elvis. And I had people coming to come. I said, we're doing Elvis together. Driving home. And I'm behind a license plate that said, E.P. Liz. I said, no shit. I said, well, I'll tell you right now. I think Elvis Parker does not live because the man was a scumbag and Tim Anderson shot him 18 years ago. In self-defense.
You know, this whole sordid story reminds me of like, if I said to you that one time I was arrested and convicted of fraud, but I was innocent. Okay, well, maybe, yeah, I mean, sometimes mistakes can be made, you know, and the judicial system isn't perfect. But if I said to you, I've been arrested 36 different times for 36 counts of fraud by 36 different jurisdictions, and I'm always innocent. You know, you got to start wondering here, okay? And this is the stench of boxing. This is what Teddy Atlas raves about every single week almost when we have one of these rotten decisions, when we have one of these ridiculous stoppages, when we have all the incompetence of the officials, all these fake title shots, this whole thing going back who knows how long. And then a scumbag like this Elvis Parker gets involved. I mean, come on, you know, it's and then see, there's so many questions about this as I was reading it. Like, what kind of legal counsel did Doc Anderson have, for one thing, that even allowed any of this? And the whole plea bargain, once he's found guilty and the jury wasn't informed that the judge's hands were tied, that it was a mandatory life sentence with no parole. Come on. This just reeks of something. There's something here. I wish we could get him on the show, or at least I'm tempted to write him myself and say that there's got to be more to this story. How could this be? Because, for one thing, an appeal just on ineffective counsel should get somewhere. But another thing, too, you know, another problem is I've talked to someone that's done some time in Florida. Now, let me preface what I'm about to say by saying that prisons and jails are not fun anywhere. Now, Exhibit A to that is you don't see a bunch of people lined up to get into them. Now, I don't care where you're at. It's no fun. But down south, it has an historic reputation of being terrible time. And this guy was describing the Florida correctional system, and it was a nightmare. Like he said, the first 6 weeks he was in a reclassification center, or a classification center, not reclassification, deciding where he was going to go. And he was describing stuff that reminded me of when I was in basic training back in the 60s. I mean, it was like throwing a cigarette. The guards would just throw a cigarette butt down on the ground, pick that cigarette butt up, boy, criminal. And he says, you don't even think of giving these guys a hard time. I mean, it's just hell on wheels. It's a law and order state down there, and you look who the governor is. And it's going to be very difficult for him to get any action at the state level, but you know, I'd have to think that at the federal level, and again, I'm not up, I'm just brand new to this whole thing. I'm not up on where they're at with it, but this is just outrageous.
At this point, the only option is to get clemency, and I didn't find out that much. So that's a long one.
For a quick recap, because like I said, just in case you know any of our listeners didn't catch our show last week, and they and it didn't record, like I said, you know, not sure if it did or it did not. Just a quick recap on the case. Back in the 90s, you had a very good young athlete by the name of Tim Anderson. He called him a doctor. He was amazing in kinesiology, and you know, he was thinking about, you know, he was a minor league baseball player, but he was attracted to boxing. Hey, it's a great sport when done right and when done ethically. He was promoted by a guy by the name of Rick Elvis Parker. And like I said, we all know I'm a big Elvis fan. That's why I was listening to him last week. And everybody who knows me knows I go to my tree lot and everything, and I'll dress up, and I'll sing Elvis, you know, do the Blue Christmas and all that. But I don't look like the guy. Rick Elvis Parker, 350 pounds, red wig, bald. Thought he looked like him. Said I'm identical, and I sing like him. I act like him. Okay, whatever your gimmick is, that helps you make money. It helps you make money as long as you do it ethically and legally. Tim Anderson, you know, one of his fighters, they booked him for a talk at a school. You know, an anti-drug talk. He gets there, goes to Parker's limousine, they're all in there doing coke. So they break off, he wants to break off, you know, the deal. He says, hey, pay me the money that you owe me, because Parker was saying that from, like, every time he'd have a fight, he was putting so much of his purse away in a fund and investing it. Well, no, he was using that for his drug habit. So when Tim Anderson wanted his money, there was no money to give him, because it was gone. And so he's threatening to sue, and, of course, Rick Elvis Parker's making, you know, physical threats and threatening his paraplegic sister, quadriplegic sister. And so now, a year or so later, is Rick Parker has Mark Gastineau, the former NFL player, under contract. Gastineau's like 9-0, but anybody could tell he was a fraud. He wasn't a good fighter. They get him a fight on USA, and the thing is, if they can get him 12-0, he's going to get a fight with George Foreman. Now, first of all, just for that fight alone, Rick Parker should have been put in jail for attempted murder right there, because God knows what George Foreman would have did to Mark Gastineau. He probably would have put him in the morgue. If Tim Anderson kicks the shit out of Mark Gastineau, what's George Foreman going to do to him? They get Tim Anderson to agree to throw the fight on USA, and to come out and say Gastineau was better than Foreman, who also had beaten Tim Anderson earlier in his comeback. Anderson reneges on the deal, beats the shit out of Gastineau. They have a rematch 6 months later in Oklahoma. Now, last week I talked about fighters of this Midwest circuit, Indiana, Oklahoma, you know, Kansas, Missouri. Well, they don't really have strong commissions down there. And fighters can build up records against suspect opposition. And with there being no, you know, commissions down there, Tim Anderson had unlicensed cornermen from Rick Parker work in his corner, drugging him. Then after he faints and you know, and vomits in the locker room after losing to Mark Gastineau, they leave him there to die. Thankfully, a janitor gets him to the hospital. He survives. But his life was shot. You know, he was drugged, and he couldn't, and he's trying to find out what it was against him, what was used. He confronts Rick Parker. He was advised to bring a firearm because Rick always carried one. Brought Rick's wife and son with him to this meeting, and they went into the room. And then Parker made a death threat against Sim's sister, and Sim shot him 8 times. And then he called the cops himself. He requested a death penalty himself. This is not a premeditated murder. And it was obviously a very sick individual. Now, if I'm a chef, and I'm cooking food, and I heard you guys over for dinner, and I make something, and one of you guys falls, you know, very sick, and take you to the hospital, and you might have an allergy that even we don't know about, and you're going to say, what's within that food? You know? Because I want, and you want to make sure that you're okay. I want to make sure you're okay. What was in that food? Well, I'm going to give you the list of ingredients. That's all Tim Anderson wanted to know. What did you put in my body that's destroying the quality of my life? And Rick Parker threatened to kill him. This man does not deserve to be spending life in prison.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know,
I'm glad we're able to revisit this topic because I know we kind of strayed away from it a couple years, and it's, you know, I think it's something that, you know, needs to be brought up. And I know it hurts the sport of boxing, but also it can ultimately help the sport by getting shady people like this out of the sport.
If that's doable, and we have to hope, for the love of the sport that we have, that it is doable, but I'm just getting to the point, I'm so cynical about this, that it just seems like it's been going on forever. And I just don't know what the answer is. I mean, Teddy Atlas will come on and talk about a commission, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's the solution either. I mean, I'm almost to the point, I'm wondering if there is a solution. But that's, I don't want to get too far off topic with this, but yeah, Tim was... And when I was doing a little research on him, I found his Larry Holmes fight. And Tim had all the guts in the world in that fight. But, I mean, I think that fight demonstrated one of Larry Holmes' strengths. You know, everyone would talk about the great left jab that he had, which he did, and his lateral movement was outstanding. But Larry Holmes was a very accurate puncher. And when he got you in trouble, he knew exactly, like when he was working that right hand of the body on Tim, I mean, he seen he was getting through early, and that right hand was shooting in there like a snake's tongue. I mean, Tim, I think, was just not only outclassed technically and skill-wise, but size-wise, I mean, when you looked at him. But he hung tough. I mean, I'll give him that. I'll give him credit, all the courage in the world.
The other thing that I read in an article about him, it was in Ring Magazine a couple years ago, and that's what first really got me interested in this topic. But Tim Anderson's roommate, I believe it was a guy by the name of Jim Murphy, they were baseball players together. And Jim said Tim was such a health freak and a health fanatic, but he was so adverse to any drugs and any alcohol or anything like that. But after Larry Holmes broke a couple of his ribs, he refused to take any painkillers.
He was in a lot of pain. I mean, I could almost feel those myself. I mean, Holmes really never got a lot of credit for his punching power, but he it was there for sure.
Oh yeah. Oh, Larry was not a one punch knockout guy. And he was an accumulation guy. Go back to his fight with Terry Kearney. Back to people of his, like, in the mid-'80s. And, you know, he wasn't a guy that was the bomb out with one shot. You know, he wasn't like your Joe Louis or anybody like that. But the man was definitely an underrated puncher.
Yeah, exactly, because, like I said, he had that rhythm. And everything off the jab, he would set things up. He would jab to the body, which you don't see a lot of. And he just... when he found that weakness, he would hone in on it. I mean, and that fight really showed it. But again, we're getting off topic about the legal situation too. So I do think it's important that we keep it going as best we can. So we'll see what we can do.
I know, even a couple of years ago, I had they never got responded to. I sent an email down to it was like I went on the Florida governor website, and I was sending emails, and I could never got responses. But it's something that people need to rally behind. And the only thing that sucks is like you were saying it right about the legal counsel. What were they doing? And it reminds me of a case in Philadelphia back in the day. I'm sure you remember a fighter that often fought on the Saturday afternoon cards, Frank the Animal Fletcher, middleweight back in the 80s.
Right.
Yeah. It was two Fletcher brothers that were really prominent. The third that ended up training with me, and my dad worked his corner down at the Blue Horizon. But there was Frank the Animal Fletcher, and there was Anthony Two Guns Fletcher. And Frank was more of he was, as his nickname said, he was an animal out there. Rough and tumble and brawler. Anthony Two Guns Fletcher was more of a Steve Clarkson type. There was a situation where back in the early 90s, there was an altercation on the street. A guy, and I forget if it was over a drug deal or a previous altercation where the guy came for revenge, but a guy, he went to attack Anthony Two Guns, and he was armed. As the fight ensued, the gun got dislodged and it went off, and it killed the other guy. The guy that won his own gun died by his own gun. And so now they go to a trial on it, but not the guy didn't die on the spot. If he would have been taken to a hospital, he likely would have survived the shooting. What ended up really killing him was that his mother, and I don't remember what her religious denomination was, but she refused him medical treatment on the basis of religion, and he died. Now, Anthony Two Gun Fletcher goes on trial for first-degree murder. How can it be first degree? If he didn't premeditate it, he basically was in self-defense when the gun went off. His counsel didn't argue that. The prosecutor said, do you know why his name is Two Guns? Because he carries two guns. No, his name is Two Guns because he was a quick-handed boxer. The defense never argued that. And they never brought, two witnesses up that would have said that it was self-defense. The defensive counsel blew this. And I remember a Ring Magazine article on it where Anthony Fletcher went, on death row. And he said every night, and you could hear the guard, walking down. You hear somebody walking down, and he said, oh, shit, are they coming to open my cell up and say it's time? And last I heard, I think he got at least taken off death row, and it might have been commuted to life in prison. I'll tell you that. I'll find that for you right now. But that's just another situation of the judicial system being wrong. It was okay. It was 1993 that he was convicted. February 6, 1993. And it was a March 1992 death, so 21 years ago. And I'm going to try to see if they say anything about, let's see, give me here. Forgotten in PA cell. And so, okay, it still looks like on death row here. And I'm trying. I thought I read something from a friend of mine, Simon Carr, who had a situation where he ended up spending 6 years in prison.
and I thought he had said something where they were possibly getting this at least sentence commuted.
Well, and you also had me thinking about Reuben Carter. You know, how long that went on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because I believe he was convicted in, what was it, 66, I think. 66, 67, right around that time. And look how long that took. Now, of course, he did catch a good friend with Bob Dylan, and that helped the publicity. And but still, that was quite a while. He was in for, what, over 20 years, I think, wasn't he? I think it was in the 90s till he got out.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. So that's what I'd like to say to Tim. You know, don't give up hope. What we need is a celebrity to make some songs here, you know, get a movie going. I mean, that's really, seriously, that's what helped Carter a lot, the music and the movie.
I'm going to send you guys just thing now on Anthony Carter, this one article I found. It's very interesting, very informative. You never thought when you did the started doing the show with us that we were going to become more of a true TV, court TV show.
Yeah. it's all a battle, and you have to have the same fighter's mentality, whether you're fighting for your health, fighting for your rights, whatever. Keep the fighter's mentality. It's like you said, you know, whether you were sick or not, you got, this isn't going to work, got to get back to my old shape, and that's what you were doing. And that's the fighter's mindset. And that goes for anything in life.
Yeah. I remember, talking to some guys, and it's like, I remember a fighter, and he was mentioned in Ring Magazine, he was more of like a journeyman fighter out of Philadelphia. But he was tough, and, you know, he had pretty good skills. And, you know, he was never going to be a world beater, but he was a good action fighter at the Philadelphia Spectrum, a guy by the name of Archie Andrews. And I got to meet Archie. And Archie, when you first met him, was a guy you thought was punchier than hell. You know, he talked to you, and he was real soft and real slow. And you're like, oh, man, this guy's brain damaged as hell. But the thing is, he really wasn't. He took a lot of punches in his career. Now, I remember there were times as he was older that he would want to get in the ring and spar a little bit, and they would ask me to go in there with him. And I was like, you know what? You can tell that the guy didn't have the reflexes that he did when he was in his 20s. He's in his 40s now, which, for the most part, he got up. So I liked the guy so much, and he was strong. He was physical in there, but I would never really try to hit him in the head. You know, I would always work body with him, but I would work hard in the body so the guy doesn't think, you know, I'm pitying him in there. But, you know, I was worried about hitting him in the head. Until years later, we're watching a thing on a local Philadelphia sports channel, and they're showing old Spectrum fights from the late 70s and early 80s. And no shit, there's Archie Andrews on TV, and he just won a fight. And they said, Archie, you know, what do you think? Oh, man, I just came out there to do my job. And I'm like, oh, shit, he always talk like that. But even in his 40s, we're sitting there, he's working out in the gym one day, and he's hitting the bag, and I remember just talking to my dad, and my dad's like, yeah, Archie, you come in here, and you work out pretty hard, you know? And my dad's obviously like, I said, you know, for an old guy or anything, but he's like, yeah, I mean, yeah, Archie, you're still in pretty good shape. And Archie's like, well, you never know. That phone call comes in, and money right. We're like, oh, you got to know. But that's the same mentality. Yeah. It's like, you know,
exactly.
I can see that I really can do this. And I know there were times, you know, even I sit there and think, you know, like, I remember writing on Facebook a couple of years ago. I'm like, man, I had a hell of a workout tonight. Damn, am I tired? And, oh, man, I hit the bag for so many rounds. And I'm thinking the 1997 version of me would have saw that and be like, you panty waste. You only did how many rounds and you're tired?
Congratulations, you did a full round of deadlift squats. Anyway, I know I sent you this story. I'm not sure if I sent Tom. I know I sent Tony the story about Riddick Bowe is going to be in a Muay Thai fight.
Now, what was that again? What was that again, Rick?
Riddick Bowe could be in a Muay Thai fight.
Oh, my God. Well, this will be interesting to see. Hopefully he's going to learn how to check those leg kicks. Because if I'm in the corner of the other guy, if Bo's opponent, I'm going to say, even though Bo's older, let's not get into a punch-out. Show him something he's not used to. That'll be interesting. Yeah.
Well,
kind of sad. It speaks volumes about his current financial situation, too, I would imagine.
Well, this article is not too highbrow. I guess they don't even know the exact date, because one says the 13th, one paragraph says the 13th, the other says the 30th, in Thailand, and they're both in May, so either May 13th or 30th. And it's going to be promoted by Kokia Group and Golden Glove Company. And Bo has not competed since 2008. Gene Puckall by unanimous decision. But, I don't know. Never done kicks and elbows. So we'll see. Marvin Eastman will also be on the same card, actually. Okay. Very well known in MMA. But obviously got, mixed martial arts to talk about, too. And you mentioned a little bit about Teddy Atlas and what he would say. I mean, we had some actually split draws on Friday Night Fights not too long ago. Never talked about on the air, I don't think, unless you guys talked about it last week. But we have UFC on Fuel TV 9 as well. Main event, Gegard Mousasi versus Ilir Latifi. I think everybody knows who Mousasi is, but now he's 33-3-2. This Latifi, I never heard of him. I don't know. Do you know anything about this kid, Tom?
No, not much.
He's 7-2. We got Ross Pearson fighting Ryan Couture, who's 6-1. Pearson's 14-6. Couture hasn't been around that long. He's just had a few Strikeforce fights, but his last one, I think it was against KJ Nunes. He kind of got a gift decision, I thought, but he fought a pretty tough fight. He's got a very different style than his dad. And it's interesting.
There's quite a bit of drama going on with that, too, in the background that Ryan seems to be handling good because, you know, the stuff that Dana said about his dad. And
right.
It would be very difficult not to let that affect you, but Ryan right now seems to be putting it all aside and just saying, I see the big picture, and Dana's an emotional guy, and he's handling this probably a lot better than I would.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, I understand he's an emotional guy, but you're talking about my father here, you know, but so it would be interesting to see how he handles the octagon jitters.
Yeah, and then we have Matt Mitrione, another Ultimate Fighter guy. Has not done too well lately, but he's fighting Philip DeFries. Mitrione's 5-2. DeFries is 9-2. This is from Saturday night, by the way. Saturday night, April 6th, that's Saturday, right? From Stockholm, Sweden. So I hope it's on some weird time that screws me up because I missed the last time we had a card like this. Anyway, we also have Brad Pickett, 22-7, versus Mike Easton, who's 13-2. Diego Brandao, 16-8, fighting Pablo Garza, who's 12-3. Robbie Peralta, 16-3, fighting Akira Korasani, who's 10-3. Michael Johnson, 12-7, fighting Risa Mandani. 12-3. Tor Troen from The Ultimate Fighter fighting Adam Cella. Already got some Ultimate Fighter guys on these cards. Adlan Amagov versus Chris Spang. Amagov is 11-2-1. Spain is 5-1. We had Pixie and Spang on that show before. We had Marcus Brimage also on this card, 6-1, fighting Conor McGregor, 12-2. Ben Holloway, 12-3, fighting Ryan LaFlair. Tom Lawler, 8-5, fighting Michael Kuiper. Pat Abidi, 8-2, fighting Beeson, 6-1. That's it. Fuel TV 9. UFC on Fuel TV 9. Getting up there. Almost double digits. We have an interesting development with Kendall Holt's post-fight drug test following last month's knockout loss to Lamont Peterson. And he had tested as an atypical finding for the same thing that got Manny Ramirez suspended for all those games. Which is kind of like supposedly a masking agent for testosterone. So, interesting stuff there. And Dan Raphael has a pretty big article about it. And here's a pretty interesting MMA story. Ken Shamrock is going to be fighting again this summer.
Wow. Wow.
Ken Shamrock, and he's going to fight Ian Freeman. It verbally agreed. We're off
talk
on July 7th.
Boy, talk about a blast from the past, huh?
Yeah.
Oh.
Wow. You want to hear a worse blast from the past? This is where they're fighting, at Keep Moat Stadium in Doncaster, obviously in the United Kingdom. Shamrock's 49 years old. He began his MMA career in 1993. Been around the world and back again.
Once or twice.
We've interviewed him twice. He was his last fight, as far as we were concerned, and it was a street fight. He was in his flip-flops.
Keep talking, you monkey. I'll knock your hair black. I want to beat you into a living death. Oh, God, it's just... I miss him, obviously, with some of those quotes. Yeah, I miss him. Just keep eating your steak and chicken. You know, that was his trainer, right?
Well, another interesting article I found this week about a study done, structural and functional brain changes in boxers and mixed martial arts fighters are correlated with fight exposure, believe it or not. The paper covered a study of 239 professional fighters comparing their brain function, age, career length, and number of bouts. The findings confirm what reasonable people would presume about a sport where you get hit in the head. Mainly that it's not all that great for your brain.
Well, I still stand by my old, the thing I've said for years, I still think there's a huge genetic component there.
Right.
I mean, and Exhibit A is George Shabalo. I mean, the man, I've never seen anyone take punches like he did. And to hear him talk today, you'd never know it. Sounds more articulate than guys half his age. Far more articulate than some of the guys in the local bars around here. Of course, that's not saying much, but, you know, there has to be a genetic component to that.
And you know what, some of the articles that I've read, and obviously I'm not a physician, I mean, I've just followed the fight game for a long time. And you're right, certain guys have genetic makeup that, you know, makes them, you know, gives them a good chin. So Joe Chavallo, you're talking about a guy that fought Cornyn, fought Frazier. You know, he fought, and that was a tremendous arrow that he fought in, and never hit the ground once. Never
right.
Was knocked down once. Yeah, that's crazy. That's
as I would say, LaMotta-esque.
Right, yeah, I love that phrase. Exactly. And I remember, and you guys have probably seen this on Classic, you know, how when he fought George Foreman, no one backed up George Foreman. I mean, you'd see people getting in against George, and it's like, okay, how do I get away from this monster? And, you know, supposedly the traditional wisdom was, you know, you let him tire himself out, but no one was able to get George past the first couple rounds. But Chaval actually had him backing up. I mean, it was an astonishing fight. If Chaval would have had a bigger punch, and once he had a decent punch, don't get me wrong, he had a decent punch, but it was the point is, I think he knew his limitations and he knew his strengths, and it was like, you hit me, I'll hit you. You hit me, I'll block it with my face, and keep going, and we'll see who's standing. And I think if fights were 30 or 40 rounds, Chaval would have really been hard to beat by anyone.
He would have to fight back in the John O'Sullivan days. But I think another one of his problems, and I remember specifically in the Frazier fight, was, and Joe was hitting him with bombs, and it was his face that gave out, or, you know, his skin gave out. And definitely didn't go nowhere. His eyes, it looked like, you know, they were gone. There was nothing there. You know, he couldn't see them. They were cut. And that's why the fight got stopped.
Right. Now, exactly. I think his orbital bone was broke, and I'd heard that one of his eyes almost popped out of the socket. And I remember he turned around, but he still didn't go down. And to me, that ranks right up there with Tim Sylvia getting two broken bones and still wanted to keep fighting. I mean, what do you do against a guy like that in the street? Thank God it was in a ring or a cage. They could stop it. How do you fight a guy like that in the street? What can you
speaking
do?
Of, speaking of damaged eyes, have you been watching The Ultimate Fighter?
Well, you would have to get on that. I hate to keep sinking back into cliches, but what's the old saying that if two fighters are equal in technique and both equal in physicality and conditioning and their cardio's up there, then things become gigantically mental. And you heard Bubba just talk about, well, I should have got those other three guys, and then all of a sudden all the other physical ailments come out. Now, I'm not saying he didn't have physical problems, because you know what those guys go through. And I would never question anyone on that, considering the fights, the training, and everything else. But then the body language at the weigh-in, when he starts covering his head up. And even Jones picked up on that. I mean, to me, the correct mindset to have is when you're at that thing, sure, there's guys that are easier than others. I mean, you get 16 guys together, there's going to be a hierarchy. You see that in every gym that you're in. You know where you're at after a while after you work out with guys. But the whole point is...
That's the thing.
Yeah, the whole thing is you've got to go there with the mindset, I don't care who it is, I am willing to go up and just blaze through anyone that is in my way of getting that Ultimate Fighter title. That has to be it. And if you don't have that, I think you're in the wrong business. I'm sorry. And I think that fight was lost before it even started. And so I think we may have seen the last of him. I don't know if he'll ever recover from this mentally, let alone physically.
Well, I don't know.
We'll see. I my two cents worth there. And then I think in the other fight, just to show what a moron I am at times, you know, as this fight's going along, I'm thinking, well, Jimmy's really showing some good wrestling skills, and it's so hard to deal with the good wrestler. And then all of a sudden, a minute later, well, it shows you what I know. It may as well be watch the first fight I've ever seen. How I got that one so wrong. And I think he felt bad
about that one. Salmon actually landed the double punch from the ground from his back.
The double punch.
They didn't really show in the replay. But then he pretty much submitted him with those last couple from the top. And Dana White was making fun of that move, saying it was like Bush League or whatever. And John Jones said it wasn't really good technique, but them if it works for you.
That's the whole point. I mean, to me, I could never, even though I started off decades ago with taekwondo. I never got that spinning stuff down. I couldn't do it. But just because I can't do it doesn't mean that if you can do it, it's bad to do. And we've seen spinning techniques working. I mean, it's hard to do, but hey, whatever works. I remember Sakuraba when he fought Hoist Gracie in that 90-minute marathon. You remember that one going back to, I think it was in 2000 in Pride. And Hoist Gracie demanded a no-time-limit fight, and Sakuraba said, okay, just give me diapers. I'll fight him all night. And I remember he had Hoist, he had Hoist mounted, but he was doing that double punch. Or the actual ear box, you know, where he had his hands cupped and he was boxing the ears. You know, you see that in the movies a lot, but he was making it work. So.
Yeah, why not? Smoke him if you got him.
Okay, and I got a spoiler alert here because I have Bellator on in the background, and Rick Hahn just knocked out Cairo Parisian. There's a name from the past, huh?
Oh, man, what a surprise.
Yeah, how about Cairo. That?
Meds now. Watch out.
Yeah.
But the week before that on the Ultimate Fighter, we never got to talk about either, of course. There's a couple good fights then, too. Yeah, it's definitely going to be an interesting finals here. We got Dana White decided to ignore what the coaches wanted. So we got Salmon facing Uriah. And then we have.
Now Salmon is taking on. What is it, Kevin? Remember, it's not Salmon and Uriah. That's what Dana's hoping happens.
Oh yeah, that's what they want us.
Right. They did.
No, they put that. They put.
And then Uriah's going to fight Dillon. You know, the New Zealand. Fuck.
Right.
Well, yeah. I'll say this much, Dillon. Of course, you've got to see Uriah as the favorite, no question. But I think Dillon, if anyone can make it a fight, I mean, the kid seems fearless, and he seems very determined. So we'll see what happens. And you know, just to talk about how quick perception can change in this game. A few years ago, Uriah was beaten by Chris Weidman. I think it was a first round stoppage due to probably ground and pound strikes, I would guess. And then he also fought Philippou Costa. What's his? How do you pronounce it? You know, the guy from Cyprus. I wonder if his bank account is still there in Cyprus. I hope not. But was it Costantine Philippou? And he also beat Uriah. And I think he beat him standing because Costin was not really a ground guy a few years ago. So it's funny how perceptions can change because all of a sudden now. Uriah is on a tear, and even Chael Sonnen said, hey, you're a contender. I was in that division for years. So it should be interesting. Be interesting to see how this goes.
Yeah, and it's not who I thought it would be in the finals. But I did get some questions back from Uriah. I think those will be in the next issue of the magazine. I got the Ultimate MMA magazine back from the first time. I submitted the article about Tough, and they actually made my one article into three. So they separated the two interviews. One of them was with Bubba McDaniel, and the other one was with Luke Barnett.
Mm-hmm.
So it came out pretty good. I'll have to send you guys some pictures of it, scanned over Facebook or something.
You know, I'm so far behind in my magazines. This is my busy work season's finally coming to an end here, April 15th, and I'm counting the minutes here. But which month was that, Rich?
It's the May, June issue.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, by all means, send me the link anyways. Yeah. So that's great. Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. If Dana has his way, that's leading up to one heck of a main event with Salmon. And, boy, there's a lot of Salmon hatred on the underground. People are really
Salmon
questioning. Is it what? I'm sorry?
I want to go Salmon fishing. It just opens for Salmon.
Yeah. There. A lot of people are questioning the acne and the aggressive personality. They're wondering about the testosterone or some other things, you know. So, We'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Well, Nick Diaz says he's going to stay retired unless he can fight a rematch with St. Pierre or that they want to put him up against Anderson Silva. That's the
only
way.
I just don't think he's earned that at this point. I think he needs to come back, and I would assume that most people would agree with me. That he, I mean, you just can't dictate an immediate rematch when you lost all five rounds and then come off with or then complain about, you know, I think we mentioned this before, how he was complaining about the one-pound advantage that that St. Pierre had, but now he wants to jump up 15 pounds? Go figure. So, I mean, I just don't see it. Plus, I know Silva right now, from what I understand, Silva and Weidman are inked for this coming July.
Right.
So I think Silva will be concerned about that. Let's see how he gets past that, because I do think Anderson's always the favorite. He has to be. But if there's a style that can give him trouble, Weidman has that style. And I think he has a little more power than Chael, so we'll see what happens.
Yes, we will. And what do we got for boxing this weekend? Anything big tomorrow for Friday night fights? Big Saturday night fights, Tony?
I went on the websites, and I don't really see much.
Nothing.
I went on BoxRec, and
fight of the week?
We got more fights in France this weekend than they do in the entire United States.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I think one or two cards in the States tomorrow night, one of them being in like West Virginia. And there was one I was like, well, because I haven't had a chance this week to even, look and see what's on ESPN. And then looking on, this weekend, and hopefully trying to look on Saturday to catch something on HBO or Showtime. I really didn't see anything. Like I said, I saw a lot of fights in France, so I was trying to get to something like Great Britain or something like that. Don't really see much going on.
Wow.
Oh, and I also think we would be remiss if we didn't mention last Friday night's fight with the Vera fight. Not that the ending was that controversial, but we had that miscommunication. I'm sure both of you know what I'm talking about, or did you both see it?
I didn't.
I was asleep early, so I didn't get to see it.
Okay, well, now the other fighter was from, where was he from? Either Romania or one of the states, somewhere. And his English was, and I know he was fighting out of Chicago, but I guess his English still wasn't really, really proficient. So the referee had went over, and there was either a headbutt or some punch. I don't know. There was a vision issue. So the referee went over between rounds and asked him, are you ready to go? And the fighter said in broken English, I can't see, or else his corner, he may have said it in his native language, and it came out, I can't see. So rather than saying, okay, hold on, are you saying you can't continue? Rather than that, the fight was called. So here we are with a little more controversy on Friday nights. For what, the umpteenth time this year? How much controversy have we had? and granted, I think Vera was ahead, but still, you hate to see it end. And there was an immediate, as soon as he stopped it, then the corner and the fighter got up, and there was all this yelling in three or four different languages about the miscommunication, and no, he wasn't ready to quit, but the referee had waved it off, and there was nothing that could be done. I mean, I think Vera would have pulled it out, but still, you just hate to see it end on that. Let the fighters decide it. So here we are again with another week of controversy, so we'll see if we can get through tomorrow night with no controversy. I don't know. That's what the odds on should be here, not who's going to win, but are the judges going to get it right and the referee, Oh, Happy New Year.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. That's your Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show for the week, I think. Give you a little overtime for the delay we experienced earlier.
There we go. So let's get after Bellator now and see how things are going to come out there. Yeah, Cairo Parisian trying to make a comeback. Well, he's, now I guess he's got another comeback to make.
Yeah, I'll definitely check this one out. I'm actually liking that they're on Spike TV now because I never had MTV2.
Yeah.
And to watch it every Thursday.
Okay, so I guess we will talk to everyone next week. And I'll say what I always do. Let's enjoy the fights.
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys.
Well, gentlemen, it was a pleasure. I will talk to you next week after the visa.
Got it.
Thanks for stopping by.